Hi, I hope you're bearing up. This is a Football Fans Podcast and the people behind CelticUnderground.net. Everybody's brain works different and you take in information. There's only so much negative stuff that you can take on board. That's the way I look at it anyway. The news is what it is. We just need to take each day. What I'm doing just now is listening to the football podcast that I can. Also, seeking out articles, non-sensational articles, because that's where you're getting the light at the end of the tunnel for all this. Listened to a TED talk today, this morning. Medicine's a marvellous thing, and we will get through this. So keep washing your hands. And please, thanks very much for listening and downloading to the podcast. This one is Anthony Murray and John Gallagher. John not had on before. John will explain what he does. If you want to know how Optostats arrive, and all the stats arrive for the games that you watch, this is the podcast for you. So this is me, Harry Brady, with him, John Gallagher. Okay, so on the podcast this week, I am joined by Anthony Murray and a special guest. How are you doing, Anthony?
Fine, great, yeah.
How's the lockdown in Bratislava? You were telling us an interesting tale about the police giving you a hard time just before we came on.
Yeah, they squealed their siren at me when I had the audacity to cycle down the street without a mask on. So, yes, yeah, it's every single person you see is wearing a mask. It's pretty odd.
Yeah, odd times indeed. And I'm now joined by another guest who, I'll get his Celtic credentials in a second, but I first got to know him because listeners will know that I have the, I'm fortunate enough to be able to get to press conferences. And I saw this guy lurking around, looking important with a headset on at times, but was patently not part of the press pack. So we'll get on to who he was. First, but his name is John Gallagher, for people who know him. How are you doing, John?
Hi, good.
Before we get into what you were doing lurking around the press conference, there's one other person that I'm going to ask you about who lurks around the press conference. You may be able to answer my query that I'll ask in a minute. But first of all, need to get your Celtic credentials for being on Celtic Underground podcast.
Yeah.
So, first of all, what was your first Celtic game and who was your first Celtic hero?
First Celtic game is a real struggle. I would have been so young. I remember my dad taking us to the games and we'd queue around at the main stand to wait for the gates to open, which I remember was about 1:30. And get straight in and run and be next to the tunnel because it was the days before your seats were allocated.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Jimmy Johnson playing. So, you know, I've dated it back and I'm going, I must have been 3, 4, 5 years old. Because I always remember the people round about me, obviously ginger hair at that age and a bit curly, and they would say, oh, you're like Jimmy Johnson. And I remember being freezing and running up and down the steps. So the actual game, I can't remember, but, you know, I should have caught the tail end of 9 the Royals were down that. But in terms of favourite player, my generation at that time, it was Charlie Nicholas. When he came on board, And latterly, I would have to say he got replaced with Hednick. Charlie was my hero as a kid.
Charlie Nicholas is one of those interesting players. We were having a discussion, Anthony, this week about players that you sometimes are prejudiced by at the time, by circumstances. You were talking about Tommy Coyne. Charlie Nicholas is one of these players where his post, the way he departed Celtic when he was just becoming a hero, we weren't used to players leaving, and then his media exploits have sort of tarnished his reputation. But for the younger listeners, John, do you want to just explain why he was so special?
He was, probably you tie it in with music at that time, but he was, when he came on the scene, and he's the way he shaped him. The way he received the ball, he was so skilled. It wasn't as though, maybe at times when a lot of strikers come in at a young age, they were fast, or they could go in behind defenders. Charlie was full of skill and nutmegs, and he just, when he came into the first team, he just kept scoring and scoring, and it didn't matter. You know, the test at that time was Rangers, he had a great record against them. He was just so stylish. So Charlie probably was the first. Certainly, I remember being all over shoot in that time whilst being a Celtic player. I always think it was a leg break they did it Morton, I think that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I then probably in his own mind decided when I get the opportunity I'll need to take it. Realising that, you know, our career can disappear overnight. There's been nothing comparable, I think, come into the Celtic first team from the youths, like Charlie was.
I can remember they used to do it was really odd. It was like it was in a porter cabin or something like that. Match reports about 6:30 at night on BBC Scotland at tea time on a Saturday after the game. Sort of 5-minute match reports with reporters had been there. So it wouldn't be live in the game. It would be in some closeted studio. And I can remember it was the equivalent of someone like Reeval Alderson or something like that, saying, yeah, Celtic fans will be saying Kenny who for this young kid, Charlie Nicholas. And I'm similar age to you, and so Kenny Dalglish actually had been a very long time ago in my head, you know, in real terms he wasn't, but so I was thinking, why would we be saying Kenny who? But it was right. You just thought, right, this is the new guy who's going to take us on to wonderful things. So your time in football after that, so we're going to get to your looking around. So
yeah,
what's your connection to football?
I done all right at school, so went down the road a part-time and went to university. So I played the lower leagues for 14 years, something like that. So Arbroath, Albion Rovers, Queen of the South, Elgin, East Fife. I 6 months with Cowboy McCormick at Queen's Park at the tail end of my career. Then went into management. It was a couple of years assistant manager at Dumbarton to Paul Martin. That would have been probably 2005-06. I got the usual experience of management and got booted. And that summer, my in-laws knew Tommy Burns.
Mm-hmm.
Used to see Bobby at mass and stuff and used to talk. And then he just asked one day, what are you doing with yourself? And I said, I'm going out Saturday afternoons looking at sofas and kitchens. And the next, I went out to play five-a-sides on a Thursday night. And the next thing came in and my wife said, Tommy Burns has phoned the house. I said, oh, goodness my God, that's some phone call to get to the house. So after I phoned my brother and say, my God, Tommy Burns has phoned the house. I need to phone him back because I didn't know him that well. And then when I phoned him back, he said, look, John, there's an opportunity in the academy. You've got a different background for a lot of the sort of coaches there. And you've had a career out with. You fancy it. And my wife and I had agreed at the time. We had a child with a lot of difficulties who sadly passed away. But when my football did finish at Dumbarton, we sort of said, that'll be the end of it. And then I came off the phone and my wife said, Tina should offer you a job. I said, aye. He said, you'll hate me for the rest of your life if I say no to this. And I went, that's a bit harsh, but I can't say no to Celtic. And went in there and did 7 years of the academy. I absolutely loved it. And then at the tail end of that, I started to work with Opta. But then my own girls started to do other activities. It was a part-time job for me. At Celtic. So at the point, I just got to breaking point between my own job and doing Celtic. I went to Chris McCartan and said, Chris, I can't keep doing this. The job had became more than two nights in a weekend. And he was absolutely fantastic about it. And that was my time up in terms of coaching. So that would have been maybe 5 years ago, something like that. But I kept my involvement in football now is doing the statistics for Opta.
So that's how I got to meet you. Conversation and press conference, what did you do? I do the Opta stats. And I thought, wow. Because we all just sit there, get the Opta stats in, and then just assume that they are correct. And we all have 101 questions as to how the hell these things are generated. So I'll get onto that in a minute. But Anthony,
yeah,
you have done coaching stuff and you've done coaching stuff at Celtic. So you get any questions for John about his time coaching?
Yeah, I'm intrigued that if we ever walk past each other in a corridor or somewhere, because I remember when I was unemployed in Glasgow in about 2010, I guess, around about then, I'd get put out of work. And I remember I was down at the job centre at Victoria Hospital. Was it Battlefield? That was my little job centre. And I remember I was sitting, you know, applying for admin jobs, office jobs, you know, small graduate jobs, stuff like that. And I remember over my shoulder hearing Celtic Football Club, you know, someone else getting pitched a thing and just saying, what was that? What's the thing on the database that says Celtic Football Club? Yep. And the guy's like, no, that's not for you. And I'm like, well, what is it? And then it was this job creation scheme. You know, it was getting long-term unemployed, you know, into some kind of job creation, good environment sort of thing. And at the end of the day, I was unemployed, and it sounded more interesting than sitting doing nothing. So I insisted on applying for it, and ended up, you know, doing quite well in it because I was quite competent and professional. But it was basically me and a gang of long-term unemployed Glaswegians, you know, going around and doing community coaching. You know, once we cleared the bar of, yeah, we can send this guy into a school and he can basically do a PE lesson with a Celtic shell suit on and not completely embarrass us. That's what we all ended up doing. And I ended up getting a couple of the community coaching jobs, Castle Milk, Hamilton. And I did it, again, like you said, for as long as I could do it. And it's, in hindsight, I think back to the time I did it, I put a lot of effort into it. But I used to be spending, like, I don't know, all the money it would take to get from Hampden, where I lived, to Hamilton on public transport.
Yeah.
To work for an hour for, like, £6 and then come back. You know, in hindsight, I was probably losing money for having done it. But, you know, it was just the love for the club that had you doing it, you know?
Yes. I mean, I was fortunate enough that, you know, it wasn't the sort of community stuff my element you were dealing with. The sort of, which undoubtedly was the best players in Scotland at any given age. You know, why players make it, don't make it, it's a different thing. But the quality that you work with when you're in the Celtic's academy is just phenomenal. You know, it's always used to remember, you know, maybe going for your SFA badges, and they would bring in another group of players from maybe another youth setup. And, you know, you then realised how fortunate you were. See, if you set up a drill with Celtic Academy players, they can just not do it. You know, if you're asking them to put crosses in, they're taking a touch and finishing, then you work with maybe kids of a lesser quality. My God, they can't even do the basics. So I think, you know, MD gets the opportunity to work in Celtic Academy, they're dealing with the cream of the crop at that given age.
I tell you one thing, and it gets back to both of you being coaches and your Charlie Nicholas comment and the thing. And I don't know if you can... Two things that connect up to me. I was at a thing recently with one of the guys in the Celtic Academy that was talking about the various drills they take kids through. But one of them was talking about one of the challenges of creating an academy system. Although it's great because you've got the elite kids, as you just mentioned, John... The downside of that is when we were younger and growing up, we played in the playground with our mates and we played in the school team with our mates. And the guy's point was, when you're playing with your pals that you've grown up with all your life, you'll have the guy who's happy to show off and you'll have the guy who's happy to then make a mistake because his mates just laugh at him and that's just what the mates do. And the problem with... he said the challenge of academy is the creativity bit, the individualistic bit, because that can sometimes be the bit people are most intimidated in doing when they're not in a crowd that we would have grown up with and you'd have played in the street with and then you'd have gone to school with them and so they were like your family and so you made mistakes in front of those people. And there was so I always think of him saying that, and one of my nephews is a coach with Thistle at the moment.
Yeah.
And this ties into my other thoughts of Scotland at the moment can create tidy midfield players. You know, if you think of the best players in the Scottish national setup, they're all midfielders. Well, you're passing the ball and you're doing the tidy thing of receiving the ball and passing it. And I was speaking to my nephew, who's a coach at Thistle, and he was telling me that he was having to take them on a shooting drill because nobody's prepared to shoot.
There's no doubt the youth system is sanitised football. If you think about it, as you say, when you went down the park with your pals, there was probably, from youngest to oldest, with 6 or 7 years age difference, you learned how to handle playing against older people. There would be aggression at times, which would spill over. You go into the youth system, none of these things happen. And I do think that's missing, is that what in reality happens in adult football is the aggression that comes in the sport at that level. I think when you go through the youth system, then you only play against your peers, same age, right throughout. There is something that they don't get exposed to. And you're right about, I think now the Celtic set up, you're at it every day and every night. You're in the morning, you're in the night, and you have games at the weekend. The opportunity, as you say, to go and just make mistakes in front of nobody, apart from your pals, it does disappear. And that's probably the one thing I would say for my time, is that the kids don't get the chance to be kids or teenagers. You know, that it's so focused and succeeding in football that the daftness that you have as a teenager, a lot of them don't get exposed to it, and it comes later on.
What did you find, Anthony, about, as I say, it really stunned me when my nephew Ross was saying that he had to teach them how to shoot because they just want to pass all day. They all just want to pass, take the ball and pass.
Well, obviously, I coached in America before and I'd been introduced. Was it the Korver method?
Yeah.
There's a sort of philosophy of little touches, little Dutch. Yeah, that was one model. And we'd been given a sort of booklet. And basically, it was Celtic rebadging that. So rather than the Cruyff turn, it was the Lubo turn.
Yeah.
And it was all, every trick imaginable had been given a Celtic slant. And so I was teaching lower, none of the kids that were involved in the community football were told diddies. You know, they wanted to be there. And it was very much my sort of job to, if you saw one that was a genuine ringer, that went up the pipeline. This wee boy here is good.
Right.
Yeah, so that would get filtered into the academy and stuff. And it's interesting, I only remember one name of one of the boys I teach who was a real standout. And I looked him up on Facebook recently. I didn't contact him. I just wondered, how did he end up? And his Facebook profile, he's in a Rangers shirt, which is funny because his dad was Celtic daft. Do you know what I mean? These were mental Celtic fans. So it's funny that his son has made it into the academy system, but sadly in a blue shirt, so that's just the way it goes, isn't it? But if you're not good enough for the Celtic Academy, there's always second best.
There's always other places. Although it's funny when you were saying about midfielders, I remember as a kid, and that's where my sort of position was at that time, 13, 14, and that was with Dundee. And what they did, they would come down one night a week, and it was Archie Knox and Jockey Scott. And I remember, at that point, saying, what position do you play in midfield? And they'd be, oh, Christ, another effort midfielder. Nobody wants to be strikers anymore. So they thought that problem existed in the early 80s as well, everybody wanted to be midfielders.
You must have some interesting tales from your lower league times. I had a former colleague who played for Queen's Park, just you were saying about, and he always tells me of this tale where It was either the game was level or they were losing, and it was a cup game, and he was a midfielder, and the ball broke out. It's final seconds, corner kick, and the ball breaks to him 30 yards out. So he's in a more defensive position, and he cracks one, top corner, scores the goal, game over, and they either then had a replay or they won. Can't remember what it was. So he's delighted, goes into the dressing room, and the Cowboy McCormick absolutely slaughtered them. Because 999 times out of 1,000, did he balloon that ball over the bar, and he should have played it back into the box.
Cowboy was brilliant. It was a tail end for me. I must have been around about 33, 34, so the legs had gone. he just went in men for experience at Queen's Park. And I'd done a lot of travelling at the lower levels, and I went, I'll go and help out Cowboy. But the 6 months with him was brilliant. He's just, he's not maybe the way modern managers are now. Well, they might be put your arm around you. John just told you how he's seen it. But he was great, great guy. I had a brilliant time at a lower level. It was almost a social event for me, it wasn't a livelihood, so I just had the best time with the football. Probably the 5 years over two spells up at Arbroath, it was just a fantastic club. You know, you knew everybody from top to bottom. I've probably got a different outlook for a lot of fans, you know, the bigger clubs, in that I really admire the supporters of all these clubs, because they're as big a supporter as the three of us in this call, you know, for Celtic. When you go and play Elgin midweek, and you've got 30 guys that have travelled up from Colt Bridge to go to that game, they're not seen winning cups, they're not seen winning leagues. They are just genuine supporters, and it amazed me, and I've got so much respect for the teams and the supporters, and, you know, around the country, because they don't have glory. It's very, very rare. But they are true supporters, because they back them. You know, it doesn't matter, win, lose or draw. So I think that'll mise playing at that level. But look, teammates and stuff, was just, you always came across guys, maybe, you know, who were now working their way down and winding down, that had fantastic careers. So, you know, the people you came across, and, you know, you could call teammates or opponents, it was just brilliant. We were really fortunate.
So, on to your OptiStats work.
Yeah.
So, I suppose the obvious question is, how do you do what you do? You know, we just sit there and it will say, you know, Celtic had 72% possession, 28% possession for Motherwell, and Celtic won 4-0. They had X shots on target and blah, 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 blah. How is all that compiled?
It's essentially a live feed that I'm doing. So as you say, you've seen me with the headset on. I'm to a call centre who have obviously the programme and the data. And the way that we communicate is the football part zoned. The possessions are there, you know, to the point that, you know, you're not even Celtic or Aberdeen. It's greens v reds. And it's very sanitised way of watching the game. And from what I tell him live, he's then feeding that into a programme that's instantly going out to all, because Opta have got the licence for the statistics for Scottish football, but obviously the likes of bookmakers and various other things, you know, rely on that information. These things then after the game are cross-checked via, you know, obviously you would find people during the weekend Opta watching Celtic TV the full game, and, you know, for any corrections or anything like that. But so that's how the live data comes about, is essentially me commentating, not in a Radio Clyde style, but commentating where the game pattern is, and obviously key events.
So
you're literally just saying, sorry.
No, Karen.
You're literally just saying, so how specific is that where the ball is in the park? If you're just
commenting. The park is zoned into about 50 squares.
Okay.
So that's, the, you know, obviously years old, you don't need to keep looking at your sheet, but, you know, it could be a free kick zone 41, you know, green 17 plays along into zone 82. And that commentary from the data that they sit in the recording produces a lot of statistics.
So, do you get caught up in the emotion of the game, or is it becoming so sanitised when you're doing it that you don't?
I think I find myself, maybe Celtic break up possession or something, you're saying, it's a great tackle. Now, there's nothing to record a great tackle, but you're getting caught in it. And certainly, you know, when you're doing, obviously, like a Celtic Rangers game or anything, it's hard. There's no getting away, but I suppose, again, just years of playing football, I think you get a wee bit more control than I, you know, maybe your mates would have at a game, but I it has its challenges. There's a certain games that, you know, are so critical and you're just desperate for things to happen. I mean, I always remember I did work at the Opta and, you know, sort of any game as well prior to continually doing the Celtic home fixtures. So, you know, you would go and do, you know, for instance, Albion Rovers or Air United or whatever and work at the games. You know, it's a life of luxury doing it at Celtic because, you know, the players, you know, you don't even need to look at their numbers. The opposition, you generally know. You know, when you drop into a second division game, you don't know the players. You know, you're really dependent on numbers. And similarly, what's brilliant with Celtic scoring at home is it's repeated on the screen. So, you know, I'm always checking how I've described a goal as it's on the screen. But I always remember the first time I did a Celtic game, I can't remember, maybe Hibs or something. I didn't realise as a fan we didn't actually replay the away goal. So the opposition scored. So as I was watching the first game and Celtic scored a couple and then I think it was Hibs scored, I looked up to the screen and I'm going, shit, Hibs don't. They don't replay the away goal. See, as a fan, I'd never thought about those things. But it's funny, there's other things that really bother you. It's referees not being clear with cards who they've given them to, or substitutions happening really quickly. The only things that bother me now, you know, it's not the quality of passing that, you know, if it's a good goal, it's because those the bookings, etc., are as important as anything else that's getting recorded.
So, you know, I've always wondered how accurate the possession stats are, particularly when you have a really poor game, a really scrappy game, where teams are not getting more than, you know, I pass it to Anthony, but that gets intercepted and that actually bounces them back to Paul McStay, who then passes and you know, Gregor Stevens intercepts it. How accurate can you keep that possession information?
It's as accurate as you described, but, you know, it is a colour code. You instantly see when it changes, but it's not going to be as accurate as if you sat there and analysed it to death on a video. But it'll be close. I think the football, I don't particularly get excited about, you know, because you see teams have good possession at Celtic Park, but it's all been in their back line. You know, or it's the goalie holding on to the ball. They're in possession. You know, but if he plays out to his full back, they go along the back line and they don't push up, their possession stats will look good, but it doesn't tell you how the game is. So I don't get too hung up on what comes out at the end of it. But, you know, it's as accurate as it can be. Probably, I don't know, marginally 5% could be either way, could be wrong, I think.
This is quite interesting to hear how this is done, because it's one of those things that I've never thought really at length about it, but I have thought about the possession one. And my internal monologue would always be, is it one guy with 22 buttons, or is it 22 guys with one button? You know, how is it measured?
There's other analysts at the games who are working differently for different companies. You know, and you see I don't know if you maybe noticed it, sometimes that, you know, they'll be sent where it looks like a phone and they've got a tab and they're tapping away, I think, with possession and, you know, the same events that I'm recording. There's no doubt that they do sat with their data. There would be variation in the possession, because it's a win that, I mean, going, particularly the Scottish football, and maybe everybody's up making, you know, challenges in the air in the middle of the park and it's bouncing about four or five times, who's in possession over that period?
Yeah.
You know? So it gives you a flavour of the game. I wouldn't think it's any more important than that.
Do you get to interact with the officials at the end of a game to try and get clarification on cards and stuff?
Easier. at the lower level. And, you know, it probably, I mean, the people who do the work up in Scotland sort of, I think they have to have been 5 years in senior football, so they probably know people as well. So they might sit the referees or assistants, they can probably have a word at the end of the game. I believe you do have the opportunity to do it, but you certainly wouldn't be doing it at Celtic Park. If you're doing a game at Cowden Beath, I think, and you know the ref, you could ask him the question, did I get that right, that booking, you know, at the end of the game. It's not going to happen at Celtic.
I was just thinking as well, if you're then getting to have that interaction with referees, suppose you can then start to, are you sure that was definitely a foul type conversation? But
I think your opinion when you do these things as well, I can come away sometime and go, I thought the referee was all right today, and sit with my brother and my pals and go, are you kidding me on? And I'm going, no, I thought I could most things right. But you know what it's like as a fan, you look on key decisions and, you know, they didn't go your way, therefore you think you've been rotten.
So what sort of level of demand is there for the Optostats? Because that's been the biggest transformation in football in our time as fans.
Well, they cover the whole of these UK leagues, right? But, you know, when I speak to the analysts, they can be coming off games from anywhere in the world, and then coming and working with me from the call centre. So I think their contracts, a lot of them are, it's worldwide in the leagues. So there is a lot of demand for their information. I think there's a lot of demand. I don't gamble, but you know how that way is sort of live gambling. Mm-hmm. So those things are important. If there's a substitution, you know, if you might change who you're going to bet for the next goal scorer, you know, so substitution's being done live and accurately on time are really important to the odds. If a guy's been taken off, obviously his odds are irrelevant anymore. But the guy coming on, you know, if he's going on up top, he could suddenly be, you know, 41, 51. So it's really important that substitutions don't get missed, because the bookmakers will be paid out on the stats.
So you're in, because I only see you at the press conference afterwards, because I'm in my normal seat. Do you sit in the press box at Celtic Park?
Yes, the press area, yeah.
Yeah, and then, so obviously, you get a live dial-in feed to an Opta Central office thing.
Yes.
So is there someone at every game that's happening in professional football in Scotland doing that?
Yep. And do you know, it gets more interesting. It's the Scottish Cup.
Uh
huh. Some of the teams that come into the early rounds of the Scottish Cup, you know, you'll be standing the side of a park, you know, covering Stirling University or something like that. You know, but every game across the country is covered.
And if you're doing it from the side of a park with Stirling University, are you doing it through your mobile?
Yes. I mean, you'd still have your headset, but you would try and function as best you can at that type of game. So as I say, there's a wee bit of luxury with doing Celtic games.
And so how many people then, where's the Opta head office that you're dialling into?
It's down south. I think they're leagues. It's Leeds or Manchester. It's massive. It's a massive operation. And you'd only need to go into their website and you see, because I think there is further levels of analysis that clubs can purchase. And the English Premiership, my understanding, is covered completely differently, because they have every game live on in the studio as well. And what you are is essentially the eyes. If you're working at the game, you're the eyes that the TV doesn't cover.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they could be following, you know, replays, but whether the replays are getting shown, something's actually happening during the game. So you work differently in different leagues, you know, subject to what the coverage is.
You get any other questions, Anthony?
I'm just wondering, you were talking about the gambling aspect of it. Opta also, you know, the video game market's huge these days. You know, your Football Managers and your FIFAs. Is there an overlap of that data?
I don't know. I actually don't know. I'm not aware of that. That's particularly the sort of FIFA games and stuff. I've got as much knowledge of that as I have the bookies. Neither of them I do.
You don't do any of the expected goal stuff or anything like that, do you?
No. See, that's where I would say it's more, it's analysis rather than...
Like, yeah, they get your data, then go away and analyse that, and then come up with all the...
Those expected goals, etc., I think, you know, you really are sitting in the cold light of day after a game, watching video very closely, and what position they're shooting from, and but you get a feel. We record shots on target, off target. You know who's hit them. You know, so I'll come away from a game knowing if Celtic have had a lot of opportunities or no. But you know, expected goals and stuff is really, that is data analysing, which is not what I do.
So, what sort of training do you get to become an Optostats technician? You said everybody's had 5 years in the game.
Yeah, I mean there's a lot of training, and it's really to make it a smooth operation with, you know, obviously the person you're working with in the call centre, you know, for any given game. But no, you need to understand how things are recorded, you know, how you interpret certain situations. We do a lot of training with videos, etc., and go, this is how this would be recorded, you know, because assists is one of the big ones, you know. If it comes off an opposition player before you score, there's no assist. The way we record data, but you know what? I think if you're a fan, you went and beat six players and crossed over the defender, you know, a flying attempt to try and cut it out, and it touches them, but still goes to, you know, Edward to score. We would all be sitting there going, "That was some assist." Like the Christie done, but officially it might not be an assist. The way it's recorded, so. You need to know how it's actually done, and they're training, you know, throughout the season and in the summer.
Is there games that you've done that, as a fan, I would sit there and think it was boring, but as a stats guy, it's been really interesting for you to cover, or, you know, something perspective is just very different?
I think so. I do come away quite often in praise of the opposition by the way they're played. It's not what you want to go and see as a Celtic fan, but you probably recognise what the two teams are trying to achieve in any game. And you see that when you're collecting the data and you're watching the game differently. I'll come away, and to be honest with you, I think most teams, when they come to Celtic Park, you know what, even when it's been big wins for Celtic, you know, there's periods of the game that these teams do well, you know, and it's just, I think at times just comes down to quality, you know, that Celtic can go and score goals, even when the game maybe doesn't reflect that they should be scoring them. You definitely look at the games differently. So I find myself quite often after a game going, "Oh, that team were excellent today," and people go, "What are you talking about? They didn't even come to try and win the game." And I'm going, "No, but the way they shaped up, the way they controlled the game, so they were in it until, you know, something key happened." So you probably have a different view, I think.
Do you have any sort of interesting sort of what might be seen as contrary takes on a player or a match or an event that, you know, some people might be asked, I don't know, maybe I'm saying Lustig was shite, but you're going to tell me, "No, actually Lustig was good," or do you have anything like that really stands out in your head?
You do become a wee bit photographic memory with it. When you're watching games, and that's probably a player that you mentioned, that I definitely came away from the games and went, "Lustig distribution was excellent today," and other people will tell me, "But it wasn't because he gave two passes away." But, and that, look, this is football and it's fans. They forget the 22 passes that he made successfully, and probably 10 of them were really good ones into Forest at the time, and into the middle of the park and into strikers. See, if he puts one out of the park, you know what it's like. It's the same when I played, fans would tell you, you were rotten one day, you know, and, oh, what did I do? And it'll be a key incident that a fan remembers. And I thought Lustig got a lot of that. You know, I think, in fact, I know other sites that do the Celtic stats will tell you how good Lustig was. But, you know, for a lot of fans, you know, they couldn't see it. It's James Forrest, isn't it?
Yeah, and actually see your point about all of a sudden the quality of the Celtic players will come in. Sometimes when I'm doing this, when I'm doing a podcast and you're talking about a game and you're trying to talk about a goal that's come from a passage of play when nothing in particular was happening, is the goal that's hardest to remember what happened because you weren't expecting it. As a fan, you're just watching the game and nothing in particular is happening. Then somebody does an individual piece and you can remember the very last bit of it, but you can't remember how it happened. A lot of the time I find that with goals Celtic lose at Celtic Park. You're trying to remember how they lost the goal because you were sitting thinking we were comfortable and all of a sudden somebody's made a mistake. They're in because opposition goals, certainly for smaller teams, tend to be just 2-3 passes and a goal.
I think I can find myself doing that at times, is coming away and chatting after a game and going, that first goal was unbelievable. It must have been about 18-20 passes. And I go, no, all I really remember is the cross coming in. You know, and I'm going, no, but see when you know you're sort of following the stats and you're who's in possession, you see, you know, maybe the intricacy that how Celtic went through the goalie up the park. But, you know, most fans only get excited when it gets into the final third and watch it, you know, intently then. There is interest in it. You definitely look at things a
little
bit differently.
What was your first game as the Optus Stats man?
Oof, I think it'd have been Albion Rovers. Because having played 5 years down there, I did have great access. And it was the manager that I worked with, Paul Martin at Dumbarton. I was the assistant, he was the manager there.
Mm-hmm.
It was to get team shape, you know, how they were going to play. I could basically walk into the dressing room and say, Paul, how are you setting up today? And he would give me that. He would have a great idea how the opposition would be because I was in league. So I think they were certainly my first games for doing Albion Rovers. But as you say, knowing people made it a lot easier. You know, in terms of, you tell you what you look out for and, you know, what certain players did and could pick it up at some good start, what you described.
What's your most memorable Opta game?
See, if you've had a night out the night before, enough to reach. The insane games of the last couple of years with Celtic Rangers games, is, you know, where you're hitting 4 and 5s. It's so important to get the data correct because, you know, the coverage is so intense with these games. The game's also live down in the Opta office. They'll be watching it. I am off of Sky or BT as well. So it's those games are like that. Everybody's watching them. Even doing Hampden semi-finals and finals I've done, you know, they're a great experience because, you know, you see the next level, I would say, where Hampden or the press have got individual TVs.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and it's a delayed transmission. So, see, for what I do, that's brilliant. You know, it would be fantastic if Celtic took it to that level next. And you actually sat with a screen when you were in the press box. Because then you can correct things, you know, almost instantly. Because it's a delayed feed. So certainly experience of Hampden working there is great to go and do it there.
One thing is just coming to my head actually. You know, you were saying so that, you know, green and you they're in the pitch is divided up into 50 seconds. How do you record somebody making a run? A long run with the ball?
That'll not be as key. It'll be more releasing the ball.
Right.
So if he picks it up in a certain zone and then releases it in another zone, that then triggers that he's moved with the ball.
So the path that he's moved isn't relevant. It's just that he's picked it up in zone green, zone three. Let's go of it in zone 42 or whatever.
Yes. So is it that triggers it, I would imagine, as the information is fed at the other end, that will show a pattern.
So, and then at what stage is, let's say that, how do they differentiate between a run and a dribble? Because, I mean, they even get dribble stats these days, don't they? So do you add that detail?
Again, I would say that's you dealing with data analysis, which is more individual player performance or whatever, which is not what I do. As I say, mine's is more the sort of key line statistics.
So I'm again thinking of goalkeepers. So Fraser Foster's last minute save against Lazio. Is that just green goalkeeper save?
Aye. That's where I think stats can sometimes get lost in what your eye sees. You know, and this is not long term talking, I'm just talking generally. You know, if there's four shots on target, but the four of these shots are absolutely wonderful and you've made incredible saves as opposed to straight at you, a cold statistic just shows it the exact same. And I think that's sometimes the day. You need to watch games. You need to be at games. You need to see games, I think. I think the guys at Celtic, the numbers, what he does is fantastic. I sit and I read it and backs up a lot of things that I thought I saw at a game. I can't imagine how much time he spends doing that. Because it's so detailed.
Yeah.
It must be the whole week after a game actually doing it. You know, you record everything.
Well, I know that we used to have Jack Lyons on the podcast who did analysis and left our podcast, I was going to say. But Jack then went become a video analyst at Celtic and is now down at Leicester. I don't think I'm telling tales out of school, but basically the system would be Celtic give it two wide-angled cameras at the game that cover the whole pitch. And he would get that and then other match day feed and I think would spend the whole of Sunday going through the two wide-angled cameras and probably other stuff, preparing the report for a Monday as to what happened on the Saturday. So that was a full day's work.
Look, it's no different for any of us, you know, sitting here fit and doing it a run. You know, we all look at how our runs are now, you know, what was my best 1K in that 5K run and my personal best. They're all data-driven and everything. It's checking how you're resting heartbeat, how you slept with a Fitbit. You know, it didn't make any difference to how you sleep, but you know, you suddenly start to look at these things.
One of the things I've been doing, obviously just to bring it back to the coronavirus and whatnot. I've been working on Skype. You know, I've been living on Skype, basically been working longer hours than I've ever worked in my life. But what I've had is like long form sport in the background, just on mute. Do you know what I mean? So just sticking on, you know, the Masters from 2005. Do you know what I mean? Yep. Just watch Tiger Woods win it. And it's funny that you start seeing things that, you know, have been lost in the narrative. So, for example, I think it's 2005 when Tiger Woods hits the greatest chip of all time, you know, to go on to win the Masters. And then you watch it back now and there's like, on the 10th, he hits the worst chip you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah.
Like something your mum would have done, you know, if you stuck a wedge in her hand. And it's funny that that's lost. And another one was the, you know, the famous Brazil team of 1982.
Yeah, yes.
I had the game against Italy on, which is just interesting to watch how much football's changed. And obviously that Brazil team's famous for scoring free kicks.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of think every time they got a free kick, Zico or Eder, you know, smashing the top corner. Then you watch a game against the Italians. The Italians are happy to give them free kicks all day long.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, they just put them on 40 yards out, 30 yards out, there you go. And Brazil, the only reason they scored hundreds of free kicks is because they took millions of free kicks. You know, because half of them, are, well, obviously more of them go over the bar, which is really
weird. I know. Well, it's like, get back to this season, the Celtic Rangers game at Christmas, at Celtic Park. you know, I came away and I couldn't believe the narrative that was out there and how Celtic were dominated and Rangers deserved the result. And I just didn't see the game like that. It's funny, I think even journalists and ex-players can get caught up with the emotion in the games, because I certainly didn't see that as a part of that game, the way that it has in the last 4 months been described as an absolute domination by Rangers. I just didn't see it.
Well, I always talk about, we had did we have twice they cleared it off the line and we hit the post or hit the bar?
Yep, the chances on target as well, goalie made saves. I mean, look, Celtic weren't the fluid way that they had been, but didn't play badly. And certainly weren't dominated. You know, Rangers get goals at key times in the game and had something to defend. When it was a 2-1, but Celtic kept charging at the door, they just couldn't get the ball in the back of the net.
And your comment, Anthony, about people remember the free kicks, it's the same principle as supporters getting excited with a corner kick. When this season, so far this season, the English Championship has had one of the highest proportions of goals scored from corner kicks. 8% of corners are producing a goal this season, which is almost double what it was the last season. Yet fans get very excited when a corner kick happens.
Okay, like, you know what it's like, but as fans at any game, if the corner's for your team, you're so desperate for it to deliver in a good area and get an opportunity. And when it doesn't, it's the worst corner in the world. But when the opposition have it, you view it totally different, with different eyes. I was brilliantly defended. When you clear it, but you don't say, oh, that was a poor corner for the opposition. You know, it's your emotion.
Do you think you'd have been a different coach if you'd have done the stats and the coaching the other way around? If you'd have done the Opta stats bit first? Because obviously when you were doing the coaching, things like Opta stats and all that didn't exist in general. Or they were only in the infancy. Do you think if you'd have had the stats input, you'd have had a different mindset as a coach?
I think like anything with stats, you can use them to support what you think, or it confirms what you thought. I think generally what I saw in a game or when I was a coach, I think stats would have probably generally backed it up 90%, 95%, but there would have been intricacies. You go, I never seen it. But the reason at the highest level they're using them is these small percentages, isn't it? Because that's the people, the difference between winning and losing at the highest level. I find them more a confirmation of how you see the game. I think very rarely do you come away and go, oh, I never seen that at all over the 90 minutes. You might not have seen, as you say, that if it was Michael Oostick, that he delivered as many crosses, and only in the cold light of day do you look and go, oh, he did. He was in the final third a lot. Think quite often your
eye
sees
on
it anyway.
You get any more Opta questions, Anthony?
I'm more intrigued about how do the coaches look at it. With Neil Lennon saying, all right, Cal McGregor, you need to get your pass percentage up, or I'm sure different coaches care for it more or less than others.
I think there's no doubt in that. I'm sure I sort of heard that Gordon Strang was maybe a big fan of them. But others, who's right or wrong? Do you know what I mean? I think you want to know as much about your subject in any walk of life than you can. And I think statistics are brilliant, and it probably allows you to confirm things in your head but I don't think you're getting that light bulb moment. You might be analysing how opposition set up. And I think that, the way you set up your team to go and play against opposition, I think, Celtic went to Europe, it must be a different world how they look, how the opposition plays and how they set up. And I'm sure the level of analysis that they do in these teams is massive. And you see it, when European teams play against Celtic. I always look at the they do the things I would do. You know, you double up James Forrest and because you know he's so key to so many things that happen for Celtic in the final third. I know a lot of fans don't see that, but I always, every team when you go into Europe, try and mark James Forrest out of the game, try and stop supply and double up on because he's got something that you know no many of them have got, which is an unbelievable change of pace. You can just, for a standing start, can just go by players. And so that analysis, I think, would be interesting, but it's never anything I'm getting involved in.
So, very quickly before we finish, back on your playing days, to allow you to extol the virtues of your playing days, what was your best game as a player?
Oh, do you know what? It was probably, just because the significance of it, was when we got promotion the last day of the season. Our Broth hadn't done anything for 25, 30 years since there were, you know, league wins and promotion. But at that point, so I always tell this story. It was the same day as Celtic stopped 10 in a row. So as we celebrated up my Broth, I ran into the tea room, went to see the pictures for Celtic Park, seen everybody on the park, Celtic get the result, and see all the photographs you always get in the back pages the next day, or the teams in their dressing room, having succeeded, won the league, got promotion. I'm not in any of those photographs, because I'm watching the pictures for Celtic Park. Just because it was such a big event, to stop 10. I loved that day personally with our Broth, but for my family and everything, I had to make sure that Celtic would get the result. So I do laugh when I see the photographs, because you see them coming up on the Broth website, fans' websites, the pictures, the dressing room, you know, everybody with just shorts on and no top, and I'm not in any of the photographs, and I know where I am. I'm in the tea room watching the pictures from Park Kid.
Just a bit of Rashomon thing here, you know, the same time from a different point of view, just so I can chip in. My dad had, you know, it was a parent and child ticket, and there was five of us. So the St. Johnstone game wasn't my turn. But we'd gone up, and you know the street where the Iron Brew factory was?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
There was a pub on that street, a pub that I would never have gone in ever. But, you know, it was the nearest pub to the entrance. That's where I was that day. It wasn't that busy. Obviously, there was some people there. And I was, believe it or not, the only person in the pub that had a Walkman with a radio. So I was basically the proxy Radio Scotland.
Yeah.
And everyone was just surrounding me. I guess I would have been 16 or 17. And, yeah, that was my experience of that day. And, of course, when they opened the gates at the end for people to get out, like a zombie movie, the whole East End of Glasgow just filtered towards the stadium. So there was more people in the stadium, you know, by the time the trophy was lifted than there was, you know, when the final whistle had gone.
Yeah.
So I was one of them. So I was in the ground for the, you know, the celebrations, but I wasn't at the game. But it was, that was cool, yeah.
I feel like Cup joys and stuff and being able to go and play at Ibrox and then the League Cup and stuff like that, and you know, play Dundee United's and Hibs, and they're all great occasions. For somebody just was fortunate enough but just enjoyed their football. And there was a bit of pocket money where it would be part time. It was the experiences were brilliant for me. When you talk about the players you get to know, and you know, I remember being at Albion Rovers, and the midfield three was Dougie Bell, Bobby Russell, and myself. And for me, I'm going, this is just unbelievable. You know, what two players are you guys were? You don't appreciate the skill levels of the top players until you actually see them in close quarters. And I always remember one of the first nights after getting the job with Celtic and getting in and just getting changed with the coaches. I remember going, George Slunn, Owen Arbstein, George McCluskey, Peter Latchford. It was just like going to a game. you're actually sitting getting changed next to them and talking to them, and you know, Tom Boyd was there, Willie McStay, and it's just, for me it was amazing. to be, you know, in the company of these people and to eventually get to know them.
So, very couple of quick questions to go through this sort of stuff. Who's got the best pitch in Scotland that you played on?
Oh, the pitches have changed now, but our Broads was outstanding. Never a game off unless it was wind. It was never the pitch.
Who was the best player in the leagues that you were kicking about with at that time who never made it? You know, in terms of never made it for a premiership team that you thought, he's just had bad luck, he should have been playing at the top flight.
Do you know...
Apart from yourself, obviously.
Realistic enough. I've got the stats on myself. There was at Queen's Park, there was a young boy who came through, John Gemmell, and played up front, had every attribute to be like a Kevin Kyle or something like that. You know, he had strength, he'd unbelievable technique, he could take the ball in, and John never, you know, I think he's maybe now junior now in his late 30s, and he was round about a few clubs part-time, but if somebody would have got a hold of John, I think at 16, 17, when he broke into Queen's Park, you know, I think he could have done something with him because he'd all the attributes.
We found the common denominator there. Kevin Kyle played for Stranraer Academy, and I played for St Joseph's in Dumfries. So I played against Kevin Kyle several times. Never came out the winning team, as she did.
You any other final question for John before we finish it, Anthony?
What was the best goal you ever scored? Were you a goal scorer?
Towards the end, it was probably up at Inverness, and I think Charlie Christie probably scored the hat-trick, though, it would be 4-1, but my goal, and I remember it would get described as Archie Gale in 78, and I had one today. Now, what maybe wasn't recognisable, I think at the time Inverness were 3-up and probably weren't they defending as they should have been, but we threw a group of players and, you know, in the box and get shot away with my left foot, so probably up there, though it wasn't a good day in terms of performance. And I remember it, my wife actually was up at that game, because we when I used to play in Inverness or Ross County, we would make it a weekend because I had pals up there, and their stadium hadn't been open that long. I maybe scored in about the last 15 or something like that, and then went out to the car. I felt quite good about myself that I'd scored that type of goal, and I said to my wife, she said, I couldn't start the game, it was so cold. I left after about 65 minutes, I'm going, I scored the goal of my life, and you've never seen it. Any more this way and you've left the game. So that was probably my best goal.
Have you got any goals on YouTube?
Oh, did you know, games are recovered. I do wish now for my girls, because they're quite into their football, that you get the same coverage then, you know, as you do now. You know, even the game going and playing, because when I was at Broth and we played Rangers in the League Cup, it was Mo Johnson's second game, something like with Rangers. So, you know, he took the heat off everybody else, because at the corners he was getting pelters through both ends. And you just wish you could actually watch the games now. But, you know, that game wasn't covered anywhere. You know, it wasn't even a highlight package or anything. Just shows you how much it's changed.
Did you get him?
I questioned him and why he was there. That's a private conversation.
I think I've said in this podcast before, I spoke to someone in the BBC, and they went across to do an interview with Morris Johnson 6-7 years ago in America, and he had a big pile of DVDs, of Celtic DVDs, piled up. And the person had said to him, you know, what's that? And he said, well, just because I played for Rangers doesn't mean I stopped being a Celtic fan.
No, like it's that, if it was Everton and Liverpool, you wouldn't think any of it if you played with another team and you still supported your original team. That it's just different up here, isn't it?
It is. Anyway, that was great. Got more of an insight into how Opta works. If anybody's got any further questions, they can send them in after the podcast and I'll text you and we'll join them. We'll
no bother.
Them
yep. I appreciate
it. And I'll say with that, say thanks very much.
And I'll hopefully see each other sooner rather than later.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Hope you enjoyed that podcast there with John and Anthony. Keep your distance. Stay indoors. We'll get through this together. Wash your hands. The next Nine in a Row Chronicles podcast will be out this week. And of course, it will be the incredible Lisbon Lions season. This is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight. God bless. Take care. Good night.
Through the years, never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me